So do I go?
Oh, I didn't know that part. Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Live storytelling from Texas Public Radio.
It was 1972. I was 24 years old, and I was flat broke. I had a raging ambition to be a professional symphony orchestra musician, to follow in the footsteps of my French horn teacher at UT Austin, Wayne Barrington. He had stair-stepped from the San Antonio to the Pittsburgh Symphony all the way up to the Chicago Symphony. I studied his career, and I wanted to follow in those footsteps. It's exactly what I wanted to do. It's a tough business to crack, to get your foot in the door. Already at that point, I had been for about 2 years on the audition circuit. If you looked at the year previous, my itinerary looked like a route map for Greyhound bus. Dallas, points north, OKC, Kansas City, Indianapolis, all the way up to Milwaukee. Nothing was coming through for me. I came back home dejected. It was no wonder that I was broke. One day I opened up the International Musician. It's the professional journal of the American Federation of Musicians. And I went immediately to the last pages. That's where the orchestras would advertise openings for musicians, and I immediately saw a notice for an opening in the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra in the French horn section. I knew right away that was my job. I sent away right away my resume, and a couple of weeks later I was invited to the audition. It surprised me somewhat because I didn't have much of a resume to send. The problem is I was flat broke. There was no way I could figure out to get there. I couldn't even afford a bus ticket to go on Greyhound. The only thing I could come up with was to hitchhike. And I'd never hitchhiked even across town. These days, you would look it up on the internet, and you would get at least an idea of what your route was going to be. You might even get some advice. It would probably be, don't do it. But back then, there was no one to warn me about that. I relied on paper maps. I figured out that it would be maybe 1,400 miles, maybe further to get there, depending on the route. And I calculated that I needed a few days once I got there to recuperate and to knock the rust off my chops so I was ready to play an audition. I gave myself 1 week to get there. The appointed morning came. It was 1 week before the audition. I packed up my backpack. I went over to I-35. Held out my first sign, Dallas, and put out my thumb. Within 15 minutes, before I had a chance to chicken out and go back home, someone picked me up, and it was a great ride. It was a ride that took me all the way to Arkansas, and the following morning took me on to Memphis. In Memphis, I picked up a great ride. A young man about my age pulled up in a Winnebago, and he said, "I'm going to Maryland. You can go as far as you want with me." I climbed on board and tripped into a conversation that was already ongoing. He was from Denton. The conversation that was going on was he was telling a person that was another hitchhiker of a scheme that he and a friend in Amsterdam had. They were going to smuggle hashish from from Amsterdam to Denton. And the way they were doing it, and the way they were doing it was the guy in Amsterdam, he was hollowing out cheeses, filling them with hash, sealing them back up with wax, and he was sending them through the mail. And it was working for them. They got away with it twice. Third time was not a charm the dogs caught on, and he was busted. He was on probation whenever he picked me up. But it was a good ride, and he was a very nice person. And I rode with him for 700 miles. At that point, I realized I needed to get to the north, and he was going northeast. So I picked up a ride with a young lady in a convertible. And I knew right away there was something not quite right. She was riding. It was the middle of the summer. It was the middle of the afternoon. She was riding with the top down. She was burned, not just from a one-day sunburn, but from a many-day sunburn. I thought maybe she was a sun worshiper. The first thing that came out of her mouth was, "If cattle were allowed to roam freely, if there were no fences, they would evolve into deer." So I thought about that a moment, and I thought, I need to catch another ride, I think. And I did soon afterward. It took me to Carlisle, Pennsylvania. the intersection with the Pennsylvania Turnpike. I was 190 miles from Pittsburgh to the west. Unfortunately, there were about 12 people stacked up there waiting to catch a ride. You couldn't walk past the toll booth. I pondered that maybe my trip was going to end right there. 3 hours seemed like six, but finally a private bus pulled up, and they threw open the door and said, "Anyone going to Pittsburgh, they can come with us." Us turned out to be a gospel singing group, and they were on tour. They were thrilled to find out that I was a fellow musician, thrilled further whenever I got my horn out, and I played for them a little bit. They sang some songs, and in no time at all, we were in Pittsburgh. 3 days later, I was in downtown Pittsburgh at Heinz Hall, beautiful hall. It was the home of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. There were about 60 or 70 other horn players there. They had been invited. Everyone expected that that job was going to be theirs. My first round went well. They invited me to come back. I played another round. They invited me to come back the following day to be in the finals. I was thrilled but nervous. I showed up. There were five of us left. I played my audition, got to the very last piece on the audition, and it was a difficult piece for me, the Nocturne from A Midsummer Night's Dream by Felix Mendelssohn. I stumbled a bit. I heard a stir in the back of the hall. It was much like this hall, where you couldn't really see who was back there. I saw an old man come down the aisle, and eventually he broke into the light, and I could see it was William Steinberg. He was the conductor of the orchestra, and a world-famous conductor as well. He had conducted all the major orchestras. I was thrilled, and I was scared to death. He said, as he looked up at me, "It's a nocturne, not Mr. Baker, not a dirge. You're playing it much too slowly." So he counted off a faster tempo. I played it for him. He stood there as I played, and as he turned to walk back into the darkness, he looked over his shoulder. He thanked me for coming to audition for the orchestra. Those were the last notes I played in that audition. They gave the job to someone else. But I thought, well, this went better than I thought it might have. I got into the final five, not bad. And I was thinking about that as I was standing on the roadside on the edge of I-35, just across the border from Missouri into Kansas. I was looking, hoping I wouldn't be stranded there for too long. And a big white Cadillac pulled up, an older gentleman, rolled down the window. He had electric windows. It was unusual in those days. I thought perhaps he was a high roller. He said he could take me as far as Wichita, so I said, "Fine, thank you very much." I got in. We made small talk. And after a while, he indicated to the right side of the road and then to the left side of the road. There were people working in the fields on either side. He said, "What are those people doing over there?" I shrugged my shoulders. I had no idea what to say. I said, "I don't know." He could see I was a little nervous, and so he looked to clarify things. He said, "Well, you know, all those people work for me." "Hmm?" And he said, "Not only that, all this land is my land on either side of the road." I was mulling that over. He was in a talkative mood, though, at that point. He changed the subject. He had been fascinated that I was from Texas, so he said, "Again, you're from Texas." I said, "Yes." He says, "I know some people very well in Texas." I wanted to continue the conversation. I didn't think that he would know anyone that I knew, or vice versa. But I said, "Well, who do you know in Texas?" And without being pretentious at all, he said, "I know John Connolly and I know LBJ. So at that point, I did what I could to mask my skepticism. And he went on. He didn't notice my skepticism at all. He said, "As a matter of fact, I'm a millionaire." So I looked over. I sized him up. He was driving a car. It might have been a millionaire's car. He had a lot of swagger. He had a lot of sway. He had confidence. Maybe he was who he said he was. Not only that, he had a fine Stetson hat on. So I began to believe that perhaps he was a millionaire. He turned to me and he said, "You can be a millionaire, too. I can tell you how." I sat bolt upright. I said, "Okay, how can I be a millionaire?" I had $10 left in my pocket. How can I be a millionaire? With a twinkle in his eye, he leaned over toward me as if to tell a secret, and he said, "Borrow $1 million. That's how I did it." Thank you very much.